This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us as another trading week is underway. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're escaping the heat and humidity of last week. It's still going to be warm, though, mostly sunny. It's 80 degrees right now at O'Hare, 69 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, a chill certainly on Wall Street, where the Dow is down 121 points or 0.5%. The benchmark's at 24,150. NASDAQ falling 15 points and the S&P down 11. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is sliding 0.25%. The Financial Times reports Europe is threatening $300 billion worth of retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. Now, retaliatory tariffs hit U.S.-built cars sent to China later this week. And President Trump told Fox News his steel tariffs were just the warm-up act for the tariffs he's threatened to impose on car imports. So car makers are among the biggest decliners today. And investors are also being hard on department stores after a researcher at Cowen said Nordstrom would likely have to close as many as 10% of its brick-and-mortar stores because of growth in online shopping. Shares of Nordstrom down about 3%. A report on manufacturing finds factories were busier last month than analysts were expecting. The reading from the ISM matched the second highest rate of expansion since 2004. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're going to be talking about tariff retaliation, as Elisa commented on. It's just kicking in from around the world. And back-to-school shopping season gets underway within days.
Tesla says it is meeting and actually exceeding its Model 3 demand and promises, but the stock is still down. We'll tell you why. Also, Stock Picker Monday, we'll have an investing pro here to give you some advice for your portfolio. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The arrival of the 4th of July holiday also signals that the back-to-school shopping season is just around the corner. We're going to be covering that in our next segment. Right now, reports on manufacturing and construction are out today, with the jobs report for June looming on Friday. We are joined by Tom Hudson, he is the Week Ahead columnist at McClatchy Tribune News Services in Miami. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Tom.
Chris, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right. What is the view from Florida today?
Oh, boy. Temper and trade is the view from Florida, right? I think that the market here and investors are quickly realizing that the strong words that the president and the Trump administration has used in regards to trade, specifically directed toward China over the past couple of months, is turning into action very quickly here. And that is rattling investor confidence, which is perhaps a bit more fragile than we anticipated, despite the market run-up over the past several months. The confidence in corporate profits still remains relatively strong. The confidence in the underlying economic data remains relatively strong. But it's the rhetoric risk now from the Trump administration. We're hearing some retaliatory tariffs on the part of Canada. We're expecting perhaps over the next couple of days to hear about how the European Union is going to respond. And, of course, this trade temper with China continues to be red hot. And that is providing perhaps a bit more motivation on the sell side in equities, but also in commodities. We really want to look at what's happening down at the Board of Trade with corn and soybeans when you want to really take the temperature of how investors feel about the direction of the trade talks with China.
Have we had an episode like this in your recollection?
No. Great question, Chris. No, not in terms of this kind of public airing of trade tensions.
The countries in two right now.
Well, yeah, definitely. In terms of with the politics of it all, you've got the rural and the suburban areas generally counted in the red category, and the urban core in the Democratic category. And here we are on the cusp of the midterm elections.
And that, of course, means that we're in store for several more months of this back and forth. Is that what you're telling us, Tom?
Well, on the political side, yes, Cisco. But I think on the trade side, there had been a lot of hope leading up to the past, I'd say, maybe 4 or 5 days, that the heated rhetoric on trade would be cooled off with perhaps less action than what the words were guiding us toward. But I think the investor confidence here has gotten rattled because we're seeing that the Trump administration, Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, willing to and continuing to move forward and push this envelope and this really heated rhetoric turning into trade action, turning into these tariffs, now perhaps talking about putting tariffs on imported cars. We're hearing back from our trade partners, the European Union and Canada and China, Japan, that we are further down this line than I think a lot of investors thought we would be just given a couple of weeks ago.
Now, is this all the tariff back and forth? Has it been pretty broad-based? Because we keep hearing about certain products, automobiles, steel, aluminum, whiskey. What's that?
Pork.
Yeah, pork and peanut butter and all.
Pork, ketchup. Peanut butter, things, corn, yeah. Soybeans, printer cartridges. I mean, that's the way the trade world works. It is down to, it's really out in the weeds. But, you know, investors are looking at that big picture and saying, well, if we're picking and choosing here, where could this end? Or how could we begin to kind of walk back some of these tariffs? And what does that look like?
But it continues. I mean, we're back on the job, you know, one day off this week, but back on the job on Wall Street.
Back on the job on Wall Street. And I think it kind of swamps the overall economic data coming in on Friday, the June jobs report, which, you know, should be the focus of kind of fundamental market analysis here. It looks to be pretty strong again, maybe about 200,000 jobs, the unemployment rate below 4%, wage growth continuing despite the fact that inflation remains generally tame. I mean, you know, that's a really strong expectation right now, underlying a really strong economy. And the Atlanta Federal Reserve, which publishes its expectations of real-time gross domestic product, has the latest quarterly GDP close to 4%. I mean, you know, full steam ahead. But instead, it's the trade talk that's really kind of rattling the nerves right now.
When it comes to the Fed, obviously you have the jobs data, inflation, and a lot of other factors. Does the tariff talk at all influence what the Fed does? What do you think?
Well, publicly, no. It doesn't say that it is. But you can't help but think that it's keeping an ear out for it and looking for how the talk and the tariffs are manifesting themselves within the economic data, factory output number, Institute of Supply Management, factory orders. Those kinds of things are places where the Federal Reserve is really going to, maybe focus a little bit more on to see if the trade tariff talk is winding up in the economic data. But, Cisco, you bring up an interesting point here. This month, the Federal Reserve is expected to amp up and accelerate the unwinding of its balance sheet. It had been selling off, quote-unquote selling off, about $30 billion worth of bonds that it bought in the aftermath of the Great Recession. That's expected to go to $40 billion a month this month for the next 3 months, and then continue to increase even more in the fourth quarter.
Tom, always nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining us. Tom Hudson, Week Ahead columnist at McClatchy Tribune News Services in Miami. Coming up, retailers putting up their back-to-school displays already.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Last year, Americans spent an estimated $83 billion on back-to-school clothing and supplies. Let's get the outlook for this year. Yes, that's right. Retailers already thinking about it. Stephen Keith Platt, director of the Platt Retail Institute based in Hinsdale, also research director at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University. Stephen, I just got to tell you right off the top, I don't think you're going to be a very popular guy if we're already talking back to school.
You know, it comes up quick,
Cisco. It does. So what are retailers doing? Here it is early in July. What are retailers already doing?
Well, you know, about 70% of all back-to-school, both back-to-school and back-to-college, occurs in July and August, about a quarter of that in July, half of that in August. So, you know, if they're not in the stores and ready now, they never will be.
And is there a lot of sales early on for parents who are looking for all the back-to-school stuff, or is that later on as school gets closer?
Yeah, I mean, typically what you find is about, you know, a quarter of the folks shop in July and they end up spending more than the later folks. I think consumers are pretty much willing to wait it out for sales and promotions.
Last year, the back-to-school spending totaled $83.5 billion, according to the National Retail Federation. How much of that do you think was, you know, like iPhones and other technology products?
Sure, sure. Well, historically, well, in 2017, about 55% is clothing, 20% school supplies. That doesn't really shift much. Last year, about 14-15% computers and electronic gadgets. So most of the spending is geared toward apparel, but the largest ticket items come in as computers and electronic gadgets.
The season supposedly begins to open right after the 4th of July. Are we really shopping that early?
Yeah, Chris. I mean, as I said, a lot of folks, about a quarter of the shoppers get their shopping done around during, you know, the month of July, about half in August. So, yeah, right after the 4th, you can expect people to start flooding the stores and getting their kids ready. As you know, this is the second most important shopping season. Most people don't quite get that because it only affects about 25% of the population, but it's still a critical period for retailers, and it really kicks off, you know, the whole year, you know, balance of the year as they start heading into the holidays. So back to school, Halloween, getting ready for Christmas. I mean, these plans are already in the works.
Interesting, though, that, as you're mentioning, that we ordinarily hear about that holiday shopping season and not about July and August with school.
Yeah, I mean, again, it sort of creeps up on you, right? And as a guy with two college kids, you know, I know that that's coming pretty soon. So we got to start saving now to pay for everything.
And so,
Cisco's starting to sweat a little bit.
Yeah,
he's
well,
got
I'm
three children.
Yeah, I'm sweating a lot. Three kids, ages 8 and under. I'm pretty much done.
Well, you better start saving, my friend.
No kidding. I think it's already too late. I don't know. So $83 billion, how do retailers battle back and forth? I mean, they're trying to get a chunk of that pie, but it seems like they're all sort of selling the same products that parents are looking for.
Well, you know, it's interesting, just like in retail in general, you know, you're seeing the movement from department and specialty to continue to people to migrate toward mass and off price, and the traditional department stores are battling massively to keep at least that apparel dollar, but you know, retail is undergoing some major structural shifts. A lot of that is spending is going into technology. You've seen that at Kroger recently with announcements of delivery to people's doors in vehicles, and they purchased a big firm in the UK for warehousing services. So you know, the traditional brick-and-mortar guys that aren't investing in technology are going to be getting left behind, and the innovative firms like Kroger's are spending like crazy, and their results show it. So, you know, this year I think holiday spending will be strong. Overall retail sales, we're looking there running around 4.8% improvement versus 2017 ex-gas and auto. Versus 17's 4.2. I think it'll be a brisk holiday season. The economy is strong. Consumers are feeling good. You know, you get away from the headlines of all the trade embargoes and other issues. Kids got to buy clothes and pencils for their kids, and people have money in their pocket and jobs. So we expect a good season.
Stephen, always nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining us. Stephen Keith Platt, director of the Platt Retail Institute in Hinsdale, research director at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University. Still ahead, electric car maker Tesla hits its production target, but shares still fall.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's check the markets with Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are still in the red and the loss is accelerating at this point with the Dow down 150 points or 0.2%. We're at 24,122. NASDAQ down 18 points or 0.25%. S&P sliding 14, also a loss there of about 0.5%. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down 0.4%, and crude oil futures, which had popped positive for a moment, are back in the red, but still holding at $74.06. For a check of the grains, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Grains continue lower across the board, and since the end of May, corn is down 69 cents, beans down $1.96. Most of that's blamed on our tariffs, but on China. At the moment, we have December corn down 10 and three quarters at 360 and a half. November beans down 5 at 875, and July wheat down 13 and a half at 484. Continuing lower. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio, WBBM.
Markets are lower today. We'll see what's moving Wall Street.
Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of suggestions from an investment pro.
Shares of Tesla are falling despite a good report on production from the electric car maker.
The Thai government says all 12 boys and their soccer coach have been found alive in a cave where they disappeared over a week ago.
Brazil tops Mexico to advance to the quarterfinals of soccer's World Cup.
Wall Street, the Dow Industrials is down 154. The NASDAQ off 21. S&P 500 down by about 15.
Beautiful sunshine and blue skies in Chicagoland all day long, heading to a high of 84, and we are just about there. Right now, 80 at O'Hare, 79 Midway, 76 along the lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Markets are in the red to start the week. We're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Art, tell us what you see on the markets today.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we started the second half today, and it's starting off very much like the first half ended, with a lot of concern over trade policy. And it's interesting, you know, trade policy is one of those concepts that's very difficult to get your arms around until it becomes economic, until it affects you. So, you know, we started in March with tariffs on things like steel and aluminum, and then that's progressed to $50 billion worth of imported goods from China that will now have a tariff on them, $34 billion of which will be later this week on July 6th. So right now, it's we don't know how long this negotiation and trade tariff and trade battle and trade war and skirmish, you know, continues, and how economic it becomes. Do companies start making decisions not to spend their money, creating new jobs and building new plants, and hold up until we find, and that's the concern. I think it's not the, you know, the tariffs on $50 billion of Chinese goods. It's what the reaction is to that. And I think the market's on hold at the very best and under pressure, probably more realistically, until we get some answers on trade.
What could happen here?
Well, what could happen is this escalates for a period of time and becomes very economic. So as opposed to the second quarter, where earnings will be fine, and we'll start hearing about that in the next couple of weeks, we're going to hear from companies about how they're reacting to trade and how it's affecting their business decisions. And I think that is when it starts to kick in and affect earnings and certainly economic growth. So, you know, the longer this drags out, the worse it becomes until we get some, you know, answers. I think the market was fine with the understanding that this is the way this administration negotiates. We just haven't seen the negotiation part of this yet. Until we do, it's going to be a headwind.
Interesting that it wasn't that long ago we were talking about a tax package and the expectation that those cuts would lead to big profits on Wall Street. And then now we have all this tariff talk. It seems like it may eat into some of that.
Yeah, it really does. You know, it's interesting. So we ended the year with a Tax Reform and Jobs Act, which, you know, literally turned earnings, you know, into something spectacular for 2018. So, you know, the first quarter was something like a 20% return for the S&P 500, more for the Russell 2000. Lots of cash and balance sheets from repatriation. So all sorts of, you know, positive influences from fiscal policy stimulus. At the same time, we're hearing rumblings of different types of lighter touch on regulation. And, you know, all of that feel good sort of turned on its heels a bit when we start to think about, you know, away from fiscal policy, we think about trade policy, which can actually be a negative. So, you know, that's the concern. We go from, you know, the euphoria over a lower effective corporate tax rate for just about everybody to, you know, what this could mean, because tariffs are really taxes, and unfortunately, it's a tax that's paid by the consumer.
So in a world in which you never know day to day what new tariff is going to drop, what's your advice to investors? How do you deal with that?
Well, if you're into ETFs, if you were to play an index, I would prefer the Russell 2000. We've been talking about that since last November versus the S&P 500. Simply stated, the Russell 2000 small and mid-cap companies that are domestically focused, they only do about 23% of their revenues from overseas, so they're less affected by trade wars, certainly less affected by the stronger dollar. Whereas the S&P 500, the most popular of the index ETFs, is got something like 47% of their revenues from overseas, so much more impacted by the stronger dollar and the trade war. So on an index level, we prefer small and mid. Russell 2000 lines it up nicely versus the S&P 500. And we've seen some significant outperformance year-to-date on the Russell 2 versus the S&P. If you want to break it down to sectors and think about, you know, what's underperformed in this environment that could still do well, we think energy's got a lot of runway in front of it. The commodity price is sort of in an upward trajectory, and the equities behind it have not caught up. So I think energy in general is going to be a good investment for the next 12 to 18 months.
Otherwise, rather than trying to play it, if you sit, it'll be okay through it.
Well, you know, otherwise, trying to play it is almost impossible. It feels as though we're getting different messages coming out of administration almost on a daily basis. And until we catch up with the facts versus the buzz around the noise that we hear, I think it's best to understand that this could play out through the midterm elections and into the fall before we get some resolve. If that's the case, it's going to continue to be a headwind, and understand that's going to cause a great deal of volatility, a lot more volatility than we saw last year.
Art Hogan, always good insight. Thanks for being with us again. As always, Art is Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. Up next, Tesla hits a production goal, but traders are not impressed.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Tesla is out with its latest production report. Let's get the details from Dana Hull, auto tech reporter for Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Dana, let's talk about the vehicle production. Tesla had set a pretty ambitious goal, and it now claims that it has met that goal. Tell us about it.
Sure. So it was really important for Tesla to exit the second quarter, proving that they could make 5,000 cars a week. And they apparently have done that. They said that they made 5,031 of the Model 3 sedans in the final week of the quarter. Now the question becomes, can they sustain this kind of production rate week after week after week? It's not enough to do it just 1 week out of the quarter. You've got to do it every week if you're going to really ramp production.
And are they, okay, so they're making the cars, but are they actually selling the cars, getting them to customers?
They are. There's a lot of vehicles that are in transit, so that means that people have bought the cars and they're on trucks, being sent out all over the country awaiting delivery. And that's good news for customers who are hoping to take advantage of the $7,500 tax credit, which starts to phase out once an automaker reaches 200,000 cumulative sales in the U.S.
What do investors want to know about Tesla?
Well, I think that they were able to kind of achieve this feat due to some remarkable Hail Mary, unconventional things. And in an email that Elon Musk sent to employees yesterday, he sort of nodded at that. They ended up, flying a production line across the world in a cargo jet. They hastily built a tent at the Fremont factory to house a third general assembly line. So they did a lot to kind of meet this figure. But now the question is, is it repeatable, and what kind of quality are the cars, do the cars have that are coming off of this line? And, they made more than 5,000 cars in the last week of the quarter, but when do they expect to kind of be able to hit that on a week-to-week basis?
Who is Tesla's biggest competitor?
They're kind of in a world of their own in that they only make electric vehicles. And that's a market segment that's very different from, other automakers who tend to, who make gas cars and then have kind of an electric offering, typically as sort of a much smaller part of their line. So if you're looking at a pure, in the pure electric market, people can buy a Nissan Leaf, a Chevy Bolt. But if you're looking at just sort of the segment where they tend to play it, it tends to be German automakers like Audi and BMW that they compete with most often.
Many people were taking tax credits in order to buy their Tesla vehicle. Any idea how that's going as far as tax credits still going on? People still using those? Are they running out? Could that be a problem for Tesla?
Well, Tesla's going when an automaker hits 200,000 cumulative sales in the United States, then the tax credit starts to ratchet down, and you can receive partial credit, but no longer full credit. My sense is that Tesla is about to hit that any day, and may end up hitting it in July. But you know, to be clear, the tax credit doesn't go away immediately. It means that it starts to slowly ramp down, and it's not really an issue for Tesla. It's always been expected. It's an issue for customers who are really counting on the full credit in order to be able to afford the car. So some people might make different decisions if they no longer qualify for the full credit. But this is something that all automakers have known about.
And so when it comes to Tesla, then that's not as big of a risk necessarily. What are the risks for Tesla going forward, maintaining that momentum?
Well, I think that, you know, as always, I mean, the company has pretty high cash needs, and as they deliver more cars, they will, you know, realize more revenue. But they've spent a lot of money on, you know, capital expenditures, ramping up production. Workers have been working around the clock to kind of get this car out the door. They just laid off 9% of their workforce. So, you know, there are questions about whether they will need to raise money again this year. Musk has said fairly emphatically that they do not need to, but, you know, that's always an open question. Maybe they don't need to, but should they? And, you know, how is the company going to kind of ramp up this production so that it's in a steady state? You know, hitting this number was a big milestone for them, but they need to hit it on a regular basis.
Well, Tesla is losing a bit today on Wall Street. Dana, thanks so much for being with us. Dana Hull, auto tech reporter at Bloomberg in San Francisco. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Because money matters, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Stock Picker Monday on the Noon Business Hour, and joining us today, Adam Sarhan, founder and CEO of Sarhan Capital and FindLeadingStocks.com in New York. Adam, thanks for joining us again on the Noon Business Hour. What's your first pick today?
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me. The first pick today is Boone, ticker symbol BOON. This is an ETF that tracks oil. It's created just recently by the legendary billionaire investor T. Boone Pickens. I have a very strong relationship with them. The firm and energy in general has been an area that's been under pressure and undervalued for the last several years. Now energy's back in play. OPEC just met last week. Demand is increasing around the world as the global economy continues to grow. And more importantly, Boone, this ETF, gives you exposure to the energy complex without having single stock risk or management risk in any one particular company.
So is it based in, I mean, is it going to try to track oil prices? Is it tracking the sector in general? What's going on?
It tracks the sector. So it's a basket of several different ways of investing in oil. And when you look at ETFs or exchange-traded funds in general, typically the price moves in correlation to another item. So there's an ETF for gold and an ETF for oil. This specific ETF doesn't move directly with oil prices. Instead, it's based on a composite or a basket of oil stocks and other oil assets. So there's a very high correlation with the price of oil, but it's not a direct one-to-one play on the price of oil.
Boone, B-O-O-N.
It's a better way to get exposure to oil, because if you just do a one-to-one play on oil, lots of times the companies, the oil stocks, go up much higher than the price of oil, and this ETF gives you a good way to capture that upside.
Boone is off a fraction today, 0.42 at 26.39. Where do you expect it to go?
It depends, of course, on the overall environment, but bearing some massive unforeseen negative economic global event, this probably could easily appreciate 20 to 40% in the next 12 to 18 months.
All right. Boone is the first pick. What's the second?
The second one is another ETF or exchange-traded fund. The ticker symbol is IBB. This is another undervalued area of the market, which are biotechs. And as our population ages, our longevity, life, we're living longer, demand for medicine in general, specifically biotechs, continues to increase at a very, very rapid clip. So the biotech stocks, if you go back to the historic low in the market in March of 2009, were really one of the leading areas of the market from 2009 all the way up until 2015. And then in the summer of 2015, they topped out, had a very, very severe correction or slash bear market, depending on the individual stocks that you were in, for the last several years. Now, in the summer of 18, 3 years later, valuations have come down, the excess has been worked off the space, and now we're seeing growth again, and more importantly, very, very attractive valuations.
Thanks so much, Adam Sarhan. Always appreciate you being with us. Adam is founder and CEO at Sarhan Capital and findleadingstocks.com. His two picks today, Boone, B-O-O-N, and I-B-B. We'll get a look at the markets from Bloomberg next.
WBBM News Time 12:55. Let's get an overview of the markets now with Elisa Parenti.
It's an improving picture, Chris. The Dow is lower by just 66 points, and the NASDAQ has turned positive, now gaining 11. S&P off 5. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 0.1%. A researcher at the London Capital Group says the fear of an all-out global trade war is central in investors' mind, and keeping trade top of mind is a report saying the European Union is planning retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods worth $300 billion. President Trump says that putting tariffs on foreign-made cars will give him leverage to win trade concessions. General Motors churns out more cars in a day than Tesla made during the last week of June, but that was a production surge for Tesla. More than 5,000 Model 3s rolled off the assembly line and are on their way to buyers. With business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.